Geister, mein geneigter Meister, Bogei. Om Sangha Timrigaya Tamiha Yoga Margaya.
Om Sangha Timrigaya
Tamiha Yoga Margaya. Dhyanas Padam Bahumatam Nayanabhi Ramam.
Dhyanas Padam Bahumatam Nayanabhi Ramam.
Pams Nam Bahurta Shayanam Ananya Siddhaya. Alpati kaisa magrinan yutamashta bogai.
Alpati kaisa magrinan yutamashta bogai.
This is the form of the Lord, which is meditated upon by the followers of the yoga process, and it is pleasing to the yogi, to the yogis in meditation. It is not imaginary, but factual, as proved by great yogis. The Lord is full in eight kinds of achievement, but for others, these achievements are not possible in full perfection. Purport by Srila Prabhupada, and it is really quite a long purport. And some of it's already been read, so let's carry on and see if we can follow it. I mean, if we can finish it. The super soul, being seated in everyone's heart, can witness everyone's activities, past, present, and future. In the Upanishads, the super soul is described as being seated with the individual soul as friend and witness. As a friend, the Lord is always anxious to get back his friend, the individual soul, and bring him back home, back to Godhead. As a witness, he is the bestower of all benedictions, and he endows each individual with the result of his actions. The super soul gives the individual soul all facilities to achieve whatever he desires to enjoy in this material world. Suffering is a reaction to the living entity's propensity to try to lord it over the material world. But the Lord instructs his friend, the individual soul, who is also his son, to give up all other engagements and simply surrender unto him for perpetual bliss and an eternal life full of knowledge. This is the last instruction of Bhagavad Gita, the most authorized and widely read book on all varieties of yoga. Thus, the last word of Bhagavad Gita is the last word in the perfection of yoga. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that a person who is always absorbed in Krishna consciousness is the topmost yogi. What is Krishna consciousness? As the individual soul is present by its consciousness throughout his entire body, so the super soul or Paramatma is present throughout the whole creation by super consciousness. The super conscious energy is imitated by the individual soul who has limited consciousness. I can understand what is going on within my limited body, but I cannot feel what is going on in another's body. I'm present throughout my body by my consciousness, but my consciousness is not present in another's body. The super soul or Paramatma, however, being present everywhere and within everyone, is also conscious of everyone's existence. The theory that the soul and the super soul are one is not acceptable because it is not confirmed by authoritative Vedic literature. The individual soul's consciousness cannot act in super consciousness. This super consciousness can be achieved, however, by dovetailing individual consciousness with the consciousness of the Supreme. This dovetailing process is called surrender or Krishna consciousness. From the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, we learn very clearly that Arjuna, in the beginning, did not want to fight with his brothers and relatives. But after understanding Bhagavad Gita, he dovetailed his consciousness with the super consciousness of Krishna. He was then in Krishna consciousness. A person in full Krishna consciousness acts by the dictation of Krishna. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, dictation is received through the transparent medium of the spiritual master. When one is sufficiently trained and acts in submissive faith and love for Krishna under the direction of the bona fide spiritual master, the dovetailing process becomes more firm and accurate. This stage of devotional service by the devotee in Krishna consciousness is the most perfect stage of the yoga system. At this stage, Krishna, or the super soul, dictates from within, while from without, the devotee is helped by the spiritual master, who is the bona fide representative of Krishna. From within, he helps the devotee as Chaitya, for he is situated within the heart of everyone. Understanding that God is seated within everyone's heart is not, however, sufficient. One has to be acquainted with God from both within and without, and one must take dictation from within and without to act in Krishna consciousness. This is the highest perfectional stage of the human form of life and the topmost perfection of all yoga. So there is more. There's about the same amount more. Let us just say a few words on what we've read right now. And then if there's time, we'll go through the rest and say something about that. But otherwise, we'll just carry on tomorrow. So let me read the verse again. Pum samgatim rigayatam iha yoga margaya. Dhyanaspadam bahumatam nayanadi rama pomstam vapur dashayanam mananyasidhaya autpattikai samagrinam yutamashtapogaya. This is the form of the Lord which is meditated upon by the followers of the yoga process, and it is pleasing to the yogis in meditation. It is not imaginary but factual, as proved by great yogis. The Lord is full in 8 kinds of achievement, but for others, these achievements are not possible in full perfection. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Chumani Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Prajane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vastuti Adeshitane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchika Patrubhya Kripa Sindhu Vyavacha Patitana Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So I was wondering who's speaking this, because this meter of verse, the rhythm of verse is typical of verses spoken by Lord Brahma. And in fact, when we read Brahma Samhita, which is so very well known, then at least in the main prayers, the so-called Govindam prayers, Lord Brahma, who is speaking, uses the same meter. So I looked back, had to go back about 20 or something like 20 verses, and yes, it is Lord Brahma speaking. This is Lord Brahma speaking. An interesting, very small point is that in the third line, it's very unusual. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, it doesn't happen. And it's just really unusual in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranic literatures that there is a syllable missing. But in the third line, there's a syllable short. There's a syllable short. It's extremely unusual. In Chaitanya Charitamrita and similar literatures, you get it. Sometimes a syllable or two missing, sometimes an extra one. But that's in these more recent literatures, much more recent. But in the very ancient literatures, like the Puranas, Bhagavad Gita, you never find a syllable missing. It's always perfectly poetic. But the third line here, there's a syllable missing. And as a result, it doesn't repeat perfectly. Pomstam vapur dashaya na, that's okay. Ananya siddhaya, there should be another syllable. Upattikai samagrinam yutam ashtabogai, is six. Six syllables in the last little section. Yutam ashtabogai, but in the last little section of this verse. Ananya siddhaya, only five syllables. Anyway, that's, by the way, a minor grammatical point, but still a little interesting. So now Lord Brahma is speaking about the Kumars, the four Kumars, seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan, in Vaikuntha. Of course, we know the story, and if you've been following the classes, then you would know the story very well, that the four Kumars, they had been impersonalists. They had been impersonalists, thinking that God is not a person. And not only God, but just ultimately there are no persons. There's just the energy of the Lord, or just energy. Brahman, spiritual potency, but somehow or other by some extraordinary type of illusion, it appears that there are persons, individuals, and even places, and relationships and activities and emotions, feelings, and so on and so forth. But it's all illusion, the classic little sutra, little catchphrase by the Mayavadis is Brahma Satyam Jagan Mitya. Brahman is truth, and Jagan, this world, is false. So, the four Kumars, they were in that category, the impersonalists. However, an interesting little and important point, actually, although it's slightly technical, is that amongst the impersonalists, there are two main types. There are many types, actually, but there are two main types. One type, which is better known to us, they are the Mayavadis. They're the Mayavadis. And the leader of the Mayavadis, at least in cosmic, more recent times, in cosmic terms, means, what was it? It was a couple of thousand years ago, which is pretty recent in cosmic terms. The most recent was Shankaracharya, and this little phrase, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mitya, came from him, or at least was popularized by him. Yes, and it's fairly straightforward. Brahma Satya, Brahman, spirituality or just the all-pervading spiritual energy is truth, and Jagan, this world, is false. In fact, their idea would be that it's so false that it doesn't even exist. I'm sitting here thinking I'm looking at you, but you are not here. It is a total fiction. And you're sitting there looking at me, some of you, anyway, and listening to me, we hope. And that's another fiction, because I'm not here either. Yes. It's just Brahman. And the sound vibration, the place, this beautiful temple room, etc., etc., whatever, is part of this world. It's just illusion in the sense, not just that it's misleading, but just that it isn't even here at all. There is no temple room, and there is no us, but rather it is all one. Yeah. So that's the Mayavadis. Maya, of course, means illusion, and Vad means knowledge. And so Vadi is a person who has knowledge, in this case, of Maya, meaning knowing that Maya is just fictitious. So that's that, that's there. But then there's a second type of impersonalist, and they are called Brahmavadis. And they are different in that they accept this world as being sort of real, as existing, but that it is like a sort of a transformation of spirituality. So therefore it is possible to like some things in this world, but in the context that they are sort of empowered manifestations of spirituality, which is very different from the idea that they don't exist at all. Very different. So the four Kumars, they're in that second category. They were Brahmavadis. And they accepted that there are nice things in this world. Like, I mean, in spiritual terms, like deities in temples, or like spiritual philosophy. They would think this is very nice because it's a manifestation of spirituality. Unlike the Mayavadis, who think that it's all just, it's not even there. That this world is not here, and even, listen to this, devotees, the explanation how this world is not here is not here. It gets a bit sort of, you know, a bit otherwise. But that's the way it is. It's a bit otherwise. So, but then the four Kumars met Narada Muni, and Narada Muni preached to them and enlightened them about the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Vaikuntha. And the four Kumars thought, you know, they became really enlivened and inspired, and they thought, wow, this Brahman, this form of spirit, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which Narada Muni is telling us about, is really nice. We want to meet this higher level of spirituality. So therefore they trekked They traveled to Vaikuntha. And here they are entering, trying to enter Vaikuntha. And it's a bit of a long story, I assume you've been following it. They encounter Jaya and Vijaya, and there's a whole sort of altercation at the gateway. But then the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes, and they see him, and they smell the tulsi from his lotus feet. And they become devotees. It's not now, their consciousness now is transforming, or even has transformed, not just into some sort of interesting Shishi Radha Krishna Kaneya Ki Jai Shishi Gauri Jai Ki Jai, not just some sort of interesting type of somewhat impersonal idea that Brahman manifests in different ways and some of the manifestations are better than others, like the Supreme Lord. He's a more attractive manifestation of Brahman than some ordinary person in this world. And therefore, we are attracted to that more attractive form of Brahman. The form of the Supreme Lord. Am I making sense, or is it sort of too convoluted? Anyway, that's the idea. So, Lord Brahma, who's speaking, who's describing this whole event, even in and of itself, it's very interesting that Brahma is capable. He's somehow perceiving this. That's another story, but it's an interesting story. So he is noting that that form of Lord Narayan, who's just appeared on the scene there as this conflict is going on between Jaya and Vijaya and the four Kumars, he's making the point that this particular form of Narayan is that form upon which people who are practicing yoga like to meditate. When he says yoga, then he is referring actually to a particular type of yoga. It's not that all yogis, all people practicing yoga, they like to meditate on this form of the Lord. It's a particular type of yogi who likes. It's the, specifically or particularly, the Ashtanga yogis. They're described, you know, to quite some degree, in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, they have their process of meditation involving very strict physical disciplines and mental disciplines. They meditate on the four-armed form of the Supreme Lord in Vaikuntha, this form, Lord Narayan. And because there's so many, because that particular form of yoga is so popular, oftentimes or sometimes, and this is such a case, when the term yogi is used, oftentimes it is referring to that type of yogi. Because there are other types. We're also yogis. We're performing bhakti yoga, so we're definitely yogis. And then there's karma yogis, Krishna describes in like the third and fifth chapters of Bhagavad Gita. Then there are the Hatha yogis. Well, anyway, there are different types of yogis. There are the Sankhya yogis. And there are many types, actually. And they are doing their different practices, which the idea of which is ultimately to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they don't understand that point. They think there's some other goal. Yeah, some other goal. So when Lord Brahma here in the verse says that this form that the four Kumars now saw, the Lord of Vaikuntha, this is that form which the Ashtanga yogis like to meditate on. Yeah. And they regard realization of that form of the Lord as the supreme realization. That's it, the top. When you reach there, there's no further to go. But actually there is further to go. In fact, our previous acharyas, particularly, they describe this, all these different types of yogas, they describe them as being like a ladder, and they use the term the yoga ladder. You start on the first rung. First rung basically means doing some physical exercises, which are meant to help you sort of tune your body in spiritually. When your body is too contaminated by materialism and your senses are just too conditioned by too much material experience, then it's difficult to free yourself from that and start becoming detached from matter and to move even just in the general direction of spirituality. So therefore, at least in the concept of the yoga ladder, the first thing is to train your body, bring your body more to the level of goodness, sattva gun, and free it from the lower, particularly passion, the desires for enjoyment in this world, or tamagun, the mode of ignorance, which is sort of like close to death, actually. For someone who's in tamagun, ecstasy, the goal, the highest level, is to sleep very peacefully. And they think, yes, I have made it. If I can sleep very peacefully. And even the Bhagavatam says that sleep is like death. It's almost just a step away from death. Because you've lost your consciousness. And of course you may dream, you may or may not dream, but you may dream, which means there is mental activity, but it's not normal mental activity like now, where we can think rationally and creatively and work things out. You may be conscious somewhat while you're sleeping in a dreaming state, but it's a very kind of dull type of consciousness. You know, I think you've all dreamt. Have you ever dreamt of falling? Or have you ever dreamt that there's danger? somewhere, but you don't know where. Something like that. Or you're trying to achieve something which shouldn't be too difficult, but it just becomes so complicated. If you're familiar, if you've ever seen pictures done by Salvador Dali, they're like expressions of dreams. Some person comes along, he's got a huge hole in his body, right through. You can look right through his body, but he just comes up, "Hello, how are you?" And because you're dreaming and you're in real ignorance, then it doesn't really register. What is this person doing with a hole through his body? This is tamagun, the mode of ignorance. It's close to death. Because when the body's dead, you can't do anything at all. And when you're sleeping, you can't do anything at all. Nothing. You just waste your time. All right, anyway. So the first step on that yoga ladder is to train the body and try to get it out of ignorance and passion and up to the mode of goodness, so that the body is not like a distraction with all sensual desires, emotions, which are coming from the body, from the senses. And then you can come up the next step to controlling the mind, by just trying to focus the mind on something spiritual. And then this is like dhyana yoga. Dhyana, meaning meditation. And then you may come up to an not just mental level, but an intellectual level, where you train your intelligence to actually understand logically spiritual concepts. This is not just mental, it's intellectual. Because we differentiate between the mind and the intelligence. In material psychology, they often or even generally do not distinguish between the two. They regard intelligence as just being like some part of the mental process. But according to Vedic literature and our experience, if you've been practicing Krishna consciousness for a while, you see there's a distinction. Sometimes we say that the mind has a mind of its own. The mind can just go off somewhere to the wrong place. But then your intelligence understands, no. What am I doing thinking about this? And with the intelligence, you can resolve, you can decide to bring the mind back, control the mind, focus it as in a valuable way. This is the function of intelligence. And that's dhyana. Dhyana with a D means that mental process, focusing the mind. Dhyana with a gya means an intellectual process of intelligence, analysis, like Sankhya Yoga is like that. And then there's Karma Yoga, which means it's now a sort of synthesis, you could say, of all these different factors, the body, the mind, and the intelligence, as a unit, and engage in activities which are for the pleasure of the Lord. But in terms of your body and mind, like Arjuna was a Kshatriya, he had that sort of body. I'm looking around here, our 10 or 12 devotees, I don't see any Kshatriyas here. I don't. You'll know a Kshatriya when you see them. They're big. They're really big. And they're powerful. Yeah. That's a Kshatriya. And they have that nature. Yeah. If there's some danger, they won't run. They'll step forward to meet it. So we don't have Kshatriyas here in our temple room this morning. I don't know, maybe tonight. Let's see. But Arjuna was a Kshatriya. He had that type of body and he had that type of consciousness. He was ready anytime if the need arose to fight, not just to fight, but to protect, really. Yes, so in his case, Karma Yoga would mean, because he has that type of physiological condition, Karma Yoga would mean to do that sort of activity, but offer the result to the Lord. Whereas Bhakti Yoga means that ultimately it doesn't really matter what sort of body or mind you have. You just want to understand, what does Krishna want from me? And whether it's something Kshatriya, Brahman, Vaishya, Sudra, male, female, whatever Krishna wants, that's it. That's what I do. And it's not, well, you know, here I am in a situation, I am a Brahman, and this is a situation which requires some sort of decisive physical action like a Kshatriya, so it's not for me, because I have the body and psychology of a Brahman. A devotee, Bhakti Yoga means whatever Krishna wants, whatever it is, that's it. I do that wholeheartedly. So anyway, we're just saying the different forms of yogis. And when Lord Brahma in this verse says, this is the form that the yogis meditate on, he is meaning those yogis, the Ashtanga yogis, described in chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita. He's not meaning the devotees. How many here? 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 13 and 14 if we include me, and 15 if we include Prabhupada. We also meditate in a sense. We meditate on Radha Krishna Kanaya Lal. Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. Or Gornitai, saving the conditioned souls in what is it? Tundu, is it? Is this place called Tundu?
Todu.
Tio. Oh. Okay. That's clever. All right. The temple of devotional understanding. Yes. And we don't just, you know, they would meditate. But those yogis, the Ashtanga yogis, they would not really meditate so much on like the pastimes of the Lord of Vaikuntha, what he does. They would really just meditate on him, just standing there with his forearms. It's more that type of meditation. Whereas the devotees with Radha Krishna Kanaya Lal, they may also, of course, they will meditate on the deities, but they'll also meditate, and maybe more, on the pastimes, on the qualities of Krishna and Radharani and the devotees, and try to appreciate those qualities and how those qualities manifest in the practical activities. Like one I appreciate very much, it's in Nectar of Devotion, you already read it some time before, because it's in the description of the qualities of Krishna, chapter 20 or 21, like something like that. It's the quality that Krishna, what is it? Anyway, the basic idea is that Krishna is reliable. When Krishna says, "I will do it," that's it. He will do it. It's when he says, "I will do it," it does not mean I will try my best, which means I may not do it, but I'll try my best. You know, often, well, not often perhaps, but sometimes devotees say like that, "I will do something," but then some challenge arises in the course of trying to do that, and they can't do it. And then they come back and say, "Well, I tried my best." Krishna doesn't do that. He just does it. So that's the idea of the quality. And the example given is the example of Queen Kunti. After the battle of Kurukshetra, before the battle, just immediately before, she approached Lord Krishna and said, "My dear Lord, this battle is about to take place. I know so many people will die. So many. But my Lord, I have one request for you. Please, please ensure that my sons," means the Pandavas, the five Pandava brothers, "please ensure they do not die." And Krishna said, "I give my word. They will not die."
He said five for me.
Five?
Yeah, because he has six sons.
Five. The five Pandavas.
That means one will die.
Okay. But the five Pandavas she was talking about. Yeah, so Krishna said, "Yes, I give my word. The five Pandavas will not die. I will make sure." And that's what happened. There were a number of situations in which they could have died, and they almost died, but they didn't, because Krishna intervened in some way or another, and they survived. Like with Karna, Arjuna with Karna. So by Krishna's arrangement, they all survived. Although only a fraction of 1% of all the warriors survived. Like, I think less than 0.1 of 1% survived. Just hardly any. So afterwards then, the Nectar of Devotion, there's this description. Queen Kunti approaches Lord Krishna immediately after, and she thanks him. That, "My Lord, thank you so much. You promised that you would see that my son survived. And by your mercy, by your arrangements, they did. Thank you. Thank you very much. You upheld your word." And then she said that one day, snow may become hot And the sun may become cold, but I know your word will never change. I find that very nice, because it's true too. This is Krishna, and this is one of his qualities, and he has so many qualities. So the devotees, even though they like to simply look at the form of the Lord sometimes, simply look, but they also like to remember the qualities and then the different situations in the pastimes in which the Lord manifests the particular qualities. And it's just, it's so fascinating. It's amazing. And of course, there are so many qualities in Nectar of Devotion 64 are listed out. That's already a lot. But those 64, they are really just, like you could say, 64 categories, 64 types of qualities. And so each quality is really just like a heading under which there are many subsets of that quality, subdivisions, like reliability in this way, in that way, in some other way, in many other ways. Yeah. And therefore it's stated, and in fact Lord Brahma actually explains in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that, my Lord, you have so many qualities that even if we counted the grains of sand on all the beaches, that's a lot of grains of sand, or if we counted all the stars in the sky, ultimately, if we counted all the atoms in the universe, what sort of number is that? It's just too fantastic. But if we were able to count those, still that number would be less than the number of your qualities. So therefore, for the devotees to remember the Lord, to meditate on the Lord, ultimately, it's a very deep thing. It's an unlimitedly deep thing. And Srila Prabhupada has provided all these literatures for us to give us a good start. A good start. But once you've made that start, if we really practice nicely, particularly hearing about the Lord, particularly chanting our rounds, performing our services, in other words, following nicely the process of Krishna consciousness, then gradually, step by step, more and more realization will come of who is Krishna. What is Krishna? What is his personality? And it's unlimited, literally. And therefore, it's possible to have an eternal relationship with Krishna and not become bored. You know, I was reading something a little while ago, maybe a few months ago, that in many cases nowadays, parents, you know, husband and wife. So there they are, husband and wife. And they get to know each other, and know each other, and know each other, until they almost over-know each other. They sort of, you know, it's just sure. And they know, in this situation, my husband or wife is going to do this. And sure enough, he does. Because they just know how the program works. So, then they have children. And of course, having children, that's a big thing. That's a big thing. Bringing up children to the point that they become independent and just go their own ways. But what I was reading is there's a phenomenon that many couples, after the children go their own ways, they break up. Because they've sort of had enough of each other. They know each other too well. And it's just boring. And there's no longer like excitement, vitality, dynamicness in the relationship. Because they know each other too well. Because they're limited material beings. And therefore to have an eternal relationship in those terms with another conditioned soul, at a certain point, it just becomes difficult to continue. But Krishna is such a person. Even you discover something new about Krishna. Something new and wonderful about Krishna every day, eternally, for millions and billions and zillions of years, there's still more. And every day it's like, wow, I didn't know he was like that, in a nice way. Not like in material life, your husband. Wow, I didn't know he was that stupid. Or your wife. Anyway, it works like this sometimes. I didn't realize how stupid you were. But with Krishna, it's every day. Wow! I didn't realize how amazing you are. How wonderful. In some way, you just never noticed it before. And it just goes on, and it just goes on. And there's no end. Therefore, it's possible to have an eternal relationship with Krishna. Otherwise, if it's like our other relationships, you reach a point, and there's just sort of like no more to learn about the person. At least no more nice things to learn about the person, because they're limited, conditioned souls. So there lies the difference, or a major difference, between what is Lord Brahma saying here, that this form that the four Kumars saw of Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha with four arms, even though he is just fantastic, just wonderful compared to what we're used to, those yogis, the Ashtanga yogis, they meditate on that form, they sit there and meditate. But the devotees, the bhakti yogis, their whole experience is different. It includes that, like we said, remembering the deity. Sometimes we test the devotees during a class. When the devotees are looking at the speaker, sometimes the speaker says, don't look at the deities, but tell me, what color clothes are the deities wearing? Anyway, you can think about that. You can think about that. So it's a meditation. It's nice during the day to remember the deities. But when you get into it, as you get into it more and more, and you delve into these qualities of Krishna and the pastimes of Krishna, in which he displays the qualities in different ways, in different situations, oh, it becomes so deep, endless, endless. And that's it for the rest of eternity. You can very happily be there. Hare Krishna. So we'll carry on tomorrow and do the last bit of the purport. But for the time being, any comments or questions? Yes.
Pretty much those in the 1960-something, they were taking drugs to try and find God. What type of category of people are they?
What category? Question is, those people who in the 1960s and whenever, the sort of hippie types who were taking drugs, and the idea was that they were wanting to realize God, what sort of category are they in? Well, Prabhupada said that Prabhupada, of course, was preaching in that time. And Prabhupada said, now, at that time, the type of people who are coming to Krishna consciousness, they're of the four types who may approach the Lord, the distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and those who are searching for knowledge of the Absolute, Prabhupada said they're mainly distressed, and or searching for knowledge. Yeah. Because they were definitely searching in a extremely misled way. Anyone else? Any comment or question? Yes.
In the purport you read, Prabhupada says, when one is sufficiently trained and acts in submissive faith and love for Krishna under the direction of the spiritual master, the dovetailing process becomes more firm and accurate.
Yes.
So I was just wanting to know what would sufficiently trained mean?
When one is sufficiently trained and acts in submissive faith and love for Krishna under the direction of the bona fide spiritual master, the dovetailing process becomes more firm and accurate. See, the thing is this, that in the initial stages like what we're in, we generally don't have much sort of perception of Krishna in the sort of tangible sense of perception, like we're perceiving each other here. But we get educated. We get educated and engaged in practical activities of devotional service. Ultimately, even if it's just under, Shiva Chaitanya Prabhu, are you president or co-president? Co. As co-president, he may engage. What's your name, Prabhu?
Chaitanya Gauranga Das.
Huh?
Chaitanya Gauranga Das.
Chaitanya
Gauranga Das.
Karuna Das.
Karuna
Das.
Chaitanya Karuna.
Chaitanya Karuna Das. Excuse me. My left ear is blocked. I can't hear properly. So, yes, our co-president may come to Chaitanya Karuna Das and say, please do this, please clean the temple, or please help in the kitchen, or please distribute some books or something. And it appears it's just him and you. What's going on? But actually he's doing that engagement on behalf of the spiritual master. So we understand that at least in the background, it's part of the process of learning, practicing, developing Krishna consciousness under the direction of the spiritual master. Yeah. So a person then engages in the process. Gradually, purification takes place, and the devotee advances. Shraddha, sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, anatha nivritti, nishta, ruchi, asakti. And then bhava, these are some of the, and then prema, these are the stages of development of Krishna consciousness. So what Prabhupada is really talking about here is that, because you see, sadhana bhakti meaning practice, learning how to do it, how, what to avoid doing, you know, all those types of things. Where it's, you know, there's the educational type of element, training type of element. This is all sadhana bhakti, which goes up to asakti. When a person goes through asakti and approaches bhava, they're entering perfection. It means they're actually entering their relationship with the Lord. And there will be very tangible interaction with the Lord. So what Prabhupada appears to be describing here is that as the devotee progresses like that and comes to that point where real substantial realization is coming regularly, including appreciation of the involvement of Krishna in the devotee's life in real terms, then it becomes more firm and accurate. And interaction with Krishna, not that there's no interaction with Krishna on the beginning stages and Krishna's just some distant person and there's no real relationship, there is, but it becomes much more solid and real and regular when the devotee becomes trained, is already reached that point, completed the training, more or less, and is entering into the perfect stage of just natural devotional service. Then they start interacting more with Krishna. It's like that. Yeah. And Prabhupada says, at this stage, Krishna or the Super Soul dictates from within. More and more regularly. And often, something like that. And so there's a great gradual progression. There's a gradual progression in that direction. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.